Today on the podcast, we're sitting down with Andy Wilch. He's actually taken the title for the first person we've ever done a face-to-face podcast with. How's it going, man?
Yeah, good, thank you. It's, as you said, a little bit weird actually talking to someone rather than not just over a phone call or, doing it face-to-face. Definitely got a different vibe about it, that's for sure.
Yeah, sweet. It was a bit unplanned. You just called up last night, you were passing through and pulled up a bed for the night and you're heading up to Queensland, is that right?
Yeah, like anything I do, I guess, like it's always a little bit last minute and on the fly, but yeah, I think they're more of the funner times, that's for sure. You don't know what's going to happen the next part, but yeah, it's worked out really, really well in the end, so.
Yeah, sweet. So everyone that's probably followed you, they know what you've been up to for the last sort of year or so, but fill everyone in on what's been going on over in Europe there.
Yeah, so, for those that obviously haven't followed, at the end of 2020, I was able to get over to Europe and spend some money to rent a spot on an Italian Husqvarna team there. At the start of 2020, we were racing here in Australia for the Husqvarna Factory Enduro team. And, as you all know, everything got a bit pear-shaped there. So, yeah, with that downtime, I sort of was able to weigh up a lot of things and felt like... Yeah, in this point of my career, it was a good chance to throw everything at it. And the one dream I had was to go race in Europe. So I'd had a little taste of it back in 2017 and that kind of got me hooked. And from then on, was trying to find a way to get over there the most affordable way possible. So with that situation, I just sort of put everything into it and gave it a good go. And got a 2-month stint over there at the end of 2020 and then come home. Spoke with a few people, tried to sell the idea of going back for a full season, and luckily enough, got some really good support through a few people and family, everyone involved basically could see that it was a good opportunity to give it a good go. And got to spend 9 months in the end over in Europe, based in Italy, racing the World Championship, the Italian National Championship, and learning as much as I could from a full-time race team. So
yeah, that's awesome, man. I reckon you made the right decision because there's not much going on in Australia for the last couple of years racing-wise, so...
Yeah, it was, scary at the time because you never knew what, the situation was going to be like overseas, if racing would go ahead or you're throwing all that commitment and money at something that might not come off. But I knew that worst-case scenario, I get to go overseas and if it doesn't play out... have a holiday and, you knew that, okay, you might lose the money on the flights to get there, but, the team was good enough where if things went pear-shaped, they weren't going to charge you for things that didn't happen, so.
Yeah.
Luckily, found a good connection in that, which was just through Instagram, just stalked whatever Husqvarna team there was overseas and hit them up, and, luckily they were interested and we could figure something out, so. That was in itself, a pretty cool achievement to be taken seriously and get that opportunity to ride for them overseas. And then, to just worry about racing for a season and not working and not waking up on a Monday morning thinking, I got to get this energy to focus at work kind of thing. That was probably my highlight, I reckon, of being able to do it. So, overall, just to focus on, those things by racing full time was awesome and learned so much from that. So,
yeah. So, What were the biggest differences over there? Obviously there's a language barrier and lifestyle, food, all that stuff. How did you handle that in the beginning?
Yeah,
you've been overseas for the 6 day, but you'd never really spent a long period of time overseas, is that right?
Nah, so the first trip I ever did overseas was in 2017 to Germany, and that was a two-week trip.
Yeah.
The first week we kind of spent it a bit of a sightseeing and stuff like that. But then the second week was race week in Germany. So that was before the 6 day in 2018. So 6 day I went to Chile and I spent similar time, 2 weeks in Chile. And that was the same, you're kind of just there for the racing and not so much living you're with everyone else. You're, with a good group of people the whole time, both trips. So back in the last 2 years, that was a big eye-opener because, you're figuring everything out for yourself. I was leaving home on my own. Normally it's with a group of people or a team or things like that. So, yeah, it's a surreal feeling, like when you're flying out and you're just like, especially that first one, like obviously with that first lockdowns and stuff, like the Melbourne airport was the pretty, most deserted thing I'd ever seen. Like no shops open, no people around. Like I think there was 10 people on my flight from Australia to Italy or to Abu Dhabi where I was flying to. So yeah, that was a crazy feeling in itself, let alone, going there to know you're staying there on your own. So
yeah, for sure.
Overall though, to adapt to living in Europe, like initially took a little bit. I missed that being able to walk up to anyone, like don't even have to know them, but just being able to start a conversation with someone. That was the most challenging thing because in Italy you find that when you can speak a little bit of Italian, people speak a little bit of English back. But if you don't even try to speak Italian, like they won't give you a whole lot. So initially when I knew no Italian, it was a bit of a challenge. Like you were literally just like on mute to everyone. Like you could walk and smile and head nod, but give a couple of thumbs up and hand gestures. But nothing too much further than that, like a hello, goodbye, and you get on your way kind of thing. So yeah, I found that to be initially probably the biggest like struggle to adapt to, and that's why I kind of tried to knuckle down and luckily a teammate at the time showed me like a language app you could practice, and I was on that like every night trying to get better at Italian and make it feel a little bit more like home, like that way you're not missing those little things and you can that can take up a bit more of your day when you can have a few conversations here and there and build up those relationships wherever you're based. So
awesome. So how about the racing? Like it looks like it's a fair bit more demanding, the racing, compared to the Australian scene, like just the terrain and the format of the racing. What's the biggest difference you noticed? Sort of, was it a bit of a shock to the system, like the first couple of races? Or
I knew from like my experience in 2017, like a bit of a taste of how challenging the tracks can get, and technical and demanding and stuff like that. So
is that like, it looks like they have like some quite technical stuff, like compared to what we have here in say an AORC. It looks like they have some stuff that's like borderline hard enduro spec.
Trials. That's what I'd almost say. On most rounds, that's what you'd get. Like last year, I think with everything going on, it was a bit hard for them to run as detailed races as they have in the past, just with so many uncertainties going on. I think Italy there, the first Portugal GP we did, like they're really technical and challenging ones. As you were saying, like some sections you think you're in a hard enduro race, but you've got to try and you got to race it, not make big mistakes where you slide off and off camber and drop down like a bad line and things like that. Or just get some sections, like just getting it clean can make the difference between like, you know, a top 10 finish or like 20th to 30th kind of thing. So that was the biggest eye opener. Like you had to technically be really good in the extreme test. We had a few like fast cross tests. So for bike setup, it was a nightmare because you think you're training in some technical stuff and you get your bike really great for that, which is what I trained a lot in. Like I made my decision bike-wise off that kind of racing. And did a bit of testing the end of 2020 for that reason. Like initially I was on a 450, which I'm comfortable in racing here in Australia with our tracks. And I raced that over there and it was a handful kind of thing for me, being like, you know, under 75 kilos on a 450 kind of thing. So by choosing a bike to suit that kind of racing, like I felt a lot more comfortable in those conditions. But some races there we'd have a technically extreme test and a fast cross test and a fast enduro test. So bike setup wise it was definitely a big challenge, but it made for some pretty cool racing and results, and like from what I could understand, like probably some of the tightest racing they'd had in a little while, which was really cool to see.
Awesome. So you ended up on the 300, right?
So
you found that better for that sort of varied terrain?
I jumped on the 300 two-stroke for last season. And we pretty much, like, it come about with racing a 450 for the races I did in 2020, and then it was just a way to go riding at the end of that trip. Like I couldn't get home with the flights being so expensive, so I booked the next cheapest flight, which was right before Christmas, so no one wanted to fly home over Christmas, obviously, which worked out good, but badly missed Christmas. But yeah, to spend an extra month there, I didn't have any plan, no bikes or anything to do, so I was going to go to the UK. So I got my gear bag sent from the last round of the World Championship to the UK with a teammate. And then as I was flying back to Italy to get my stuff to go to the UK, the team manager's like, oh, we've got a 300 two-stroke coming in. Would you like to test that for us? I said, yeah, I'd love to, but I've got no gear because I just sent it over to the UK. So, luckily, over the years, I've had bits and pieces left there from other riders. So we just threw on, someone else's helmet, someone else's old boots, bits and pieces that we could make of it all. And, got to test, and trail ride and just have some fun on a 300 two-stroke the end of that year.
Yeah.
And just bit by bit, I was enjoying that bike just in standard form. And I knew that with a few bits and pieces, we could make it, bit easier to ride and, better for racing kind of thing. So,
yeah.
And at that time they had an E1 rider already, an E2 rider. And then the third spot, if I was to race, would be an E3. So that leaves you with the option of a 300 two stroke or a 500 four stroke. So in the conditions I saw, it was going to be hard work on a 500, whereas the 300 felt easy to ride. And getting back to the demands of the track, the racing over there, you're constantly on the bike for 8 hours, and on a tough weekend, you'll be lucky to get 5 maximum 10 minute breaks every sort of hour and a half, 2 hours. So say for instance you're racing for 8 hours, you're realistically only going to get 30-40 minutes off the bike.
Yeah,
the rest of the time you're trail riding or racing. So it definitely was demanding, and it opens your eyes to having to do that work before the racing, because it's too late when you rock up to one of them races sort of thing if you're just expecting to build you go. So
For sure.
That was a key thing, finding a bike that wasn't going to wear me out as much.
Do many people actually ride the 500s over there, or not really?
There was a couple this year, mainly guys from Spain and stuff like that, because their national championship's a bit more similar to here.
Yeah.
A bit more open, not so technical. So, there was three Spanish guys, on different 500s. So, the rest, all the Italians are 250, four-stroke guys. It's rare to even see 300 two-stroke riders over there.
Yeah, right.
You got sort of obviously the guys that Freeman that are winning with Beta the last few years, and McKenny on a Sherco and things like that. But up until last year, most of the guys would be on, especially where I was based, would be on 250 four-strokes or 350s. No one, it barely goes a 450 over there. So it's that's just due to the fact of the tracks being a lot more technical, and you can get yourself in a lot more trouble on bigger bikes over there. So it's just different. Yeah, a lot different to what we have here, that's for sure.
Yeah. And what about training wise, you kind of mentioned before, you went over there and that was your job for the you didn't have to worry about working per se, so every day of the week was focused on training, getting the bike better, testing, all that stuff. So what are some of the big things you learned out of that process?
Yeah, I think, the biggest thing I probably learned is, which we have so good here, is that, to go riding over there, we'd lose probably a minimum half the day just from traveling and trying to get to places that were replicating what we'd have to do.
Yeah, right.
We had good places to ride, but, you're traveling for minimum 40 minutes to get there most of the time. So, sometimes you drive an hour to get to this one special test, and then you do you're riding there, and then by the time you pack up, get back home, you're middle of the afternoon, and you've lost kind of that halfway point of the day where you can reset and do something in the afternoon. You kind of, by the time you get home, wash the bike and prep for the next day, you're only left with a certain amount of time before you're cooking dinner and whatnot. So the way that the lifestyle is over there too, they're nowhere near as trying to jam-pack things in like we do here either. So that takes a bit of adapting to, and especially in that situation, you don't want to go an hour drive to ride on your own. We're always working in with someone else.
Yeah.
So that was probably the biggest challenge, you couldn't be too independent over there. And that's where I think you see the top guys normally have a partner or something that comes along with them. And they can be a little bit more what they need to do and tailored to what they need to do every time.
Yeah.
And that was like a big thing I kind of learned. Yeah, you almost need that, like, I just want to go ride this track for this long, and then we'll go do this. And that seems to work for a few of the guys from what I've seen, kind of thing. But yeah, that was probably the biggest challenge, was that traveling to go training kind of thing was where you felt like you used a fair bit of your time up, sadly. So
yeah,
you know, it was like that catch 22. It's like the support's there to ride full time, but then your luxury of being able to ride wherever you want, like we have in spots here in Australia, you didn't have. So
yeah,
it's like, yeah, it's, I think in a perfect scenario, you'd have like what we have here in Australia with the support you can get over in Europe. So
yeah.
Yeah, but bit by bit, like anywhere, the more you live there, the more connections you make, the easier it would be to train in good spots and have that set up better, I feel. So
yeah.
But yeah, overall, that was probably, I'd say, the biggest challenge. But yeah, from being able to ride full time, like, it was really cool to see how much you can actually build up your bike fitness and things like that from continuing to like work on things and
yeah, being consistent.
Yeah, and just being able to worry about what you need to do from the previous race or anything like that. Like, okay, that's how I went there, this is what I want to work on this week, and just being able to execute that each week with not too many distractions. So
yeah,
that was definitely a really big highlight. So
yeah. Do you think, like, what we do have here in Australia, do you think it prepares you pretty well for going over to Europe?
I think speed-wise, yeah. Like, which I think it's been proven time and time again. Like,
yeah,
we've got an Aussie guy that's been there for a few years, like in Will Rupert, which first race he did over there after racing in Australia his whole career, went 1-1 and beat, you know, like a three-time 250 champ that's in Andrea Verona, like from Italy there. So he, yeah, you know, showed that the speed that we have here is really good.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, like he's last year was like winning the championship kind of thing in his third year outright. So the speed, I don't think is the issue.
Yeah.
It's just like, I think over there, it's probably honestly what I was saying before, like just that luxury of training we have here, we can do as much as we need.
Yeah.
Over there, it's trying to have everything set up in a good way that you can keep that going over there.
Yeah.
Because, sort of from my experience, that's what I reckon makes a difference as the year goes on, is that consistency and being able to keep improving kind of thing. So,
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I think what we have here prepares us really well for our speed. I think we've seen that like heaps with the top guys like Sanders, Milner, and all those boys, Snodgrass, Strang, like all of us sort of going overseas are really competitive straight away. So,
yeah,
I don't think our problem is the speed. It's, if anything, just the technical stuff, where it's pretty hard to replicate here, because as you said, like to most people, we'd be racing hard enduro if we did what we had to race over there. I think it's more when you get over there, like there's nowhere near as much space, so they're kind of forced into these areas to have races, because you don't have that luxury just going through a paddock and things like that. So
yeah, they do have the luxury of having a test on a beach, though. I saw it that first round in Italy. I thought that was pretty cool. I thought, I don't know if they'd let us do that in Australia.
Nah, that's what I mean. That honestly is the one thing I love and probably miss the most about Europe, is they're like, dirt bikes in general are so well respected over there. Like if someone finds out, like you'd go to a local cafe or something, can say you're an enduro rider. Oh, enduro, amazing kind of thing. Like, top, awesome. So yeah, it's a cool feeling. Like if you wear like a Husky team shirt or something, everyone just kind of looks at you different. Like, oh, he's a racer or a mechanic or something, like something involved in racing, which it's, is that side to it. And then you see everyone have locks on every single van, so you know bikes are pretty important over there kind of thing. So, but, overall it's really cool to have that. Because then it opens up possibilities to like towns and cities being like, yeah, we want you to race on our beach, or go ride through the mountains, we don't mind. Like, that's what it was cool about it. Like, it's a little bit harder to go, say, like trail riding and have fun kind of thing, because everything's so close to cities over there. But then they have like a race every single weekend in Italy. So like if you're an Italian national, like if you wanted to, you could race from February all the way through to like October.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to. So
yeah.
Yeah, they're crazy for racing over there, and it's kind of their way to get to the chance to ride everywhere. So
how does it actually work like quickly, just the World GP, because they do they actually have like a qualifying type thing, that super sprint, or is that just is that for your seeding for the first day, or is it that just goes towards your total time?
Yeah, so from what I understood of it, it's basically your top 10 riders. That's the only difference it makes. If you're outside the top 10, it's the same as being 100th.
Okay.
Like your time doesn't count.
No. Yeah.
But yeah, for the top 10 guys, it's a difference between, okay, if you won, beat the guy in 10th, if you won it and you finished 10th and there was 10 seconds gap, you've got a 10 second advantage into the first day.
Yeah, right.
So still, you still are fighting for a bit of time over your competitors, but
yeah,
if you have a massive mistake, the worst case scenario, you're 10th kind of thing. So
yeah, okay.
It's good in that aspect that it can't destroy your race, I guess. But it's mainly like for the crowd and bringing that excitement to the racing, and we have it always in town, so you know the spectators aren't traveling out to somewhere in the middle of nowhere to come watch or anything like that. So that's something really cool about it, and yeah, the excitement's ridiculous for it, which is really cool. So
I think that's a cool thing, because that's what is difficult for off-road events, isn't it? Like motocross, obviously it's all in one spot, Pete. It's easier to get spectators, whereas off-road people, like, you got to be a diehard fan to go and walk around out in the bush to watch an off-road event. So being able to bring it into a space like that where the public can get around, it's pretty rad.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, I think that's like, to me, something they do really well over there is they try and attract the, you know, the spectators and things like that. And like in France, there blew me away. They had beer tents at the top of these hills, like in between our special tests. I'm like, what the hell is their tents like? You know, we're just driving down like a country road and you just see some tents there. I was like, maybe that's like a service control or something like that. And then surely enough, the first day I come racing through there and I'm coming this massive hill climb and there's just people lined up each side of it. I was like, all right, this is going to be obviously a gnarly hill climb, because there's no reason why people would stand there in the middle of nowhere for nothing. So
yeah,
surely enough, I found out one day why I was down there, stumps hanging out of the dirt and you can't see them because the sun's in your eyes and whatnot. But yeah, they seem to tailor. It's obviously a world event, so they want to do it well. But yeah, they seem to tailor it around that kind of thing. Like, all right, spectators want to see this, spectators want to see that. So
yeah,
that was cool to just experience and see that that's how they can organize it.
Yeah,
obviously, depending on which venue you're at, you can make that happen for sure. But yeah, in that circumstance, you'd have people on the trail section, which can be gnarly at times, which is one thing the Enduro GP and at times the Italian Championship can be like. But yeah, the World Championship's always a lot more challenging. Like, they'll have, you know, say a bad hill climb, that'll be for all the Enduro GP riders. And then if there's a national championship on that weekend, they'll have an easier line for them, so that, you know, it's still rideable, but it's good for spectators to see what's the difference between a top world rider and your average, you know, guys just going out there for fun. So
Yeah,
those few things are really cool about that championship, I find. It's good to follow as a spectator, which, you know, then attracts a lot more possibilities for the sport. So
yeah, for sure. What about now you're back home, you've been home for a few months now, and you're obviously, that's why you're here, on your way up to Queensland for the first round of the AORC. So you're back on the Husky, so tell us about that deal you got going on this year.
Yeah, as I come home, it was like a bit of a crazy time when I got home. Like, I was in two minds. Like, the team I was riding for there were trying to organize something, but, you know, it's one of those things, like, if you come in and sort of beat everyone, it's a lot easier to get support over there. But if you're not that much quicker than a European guy, like, it's really hard for them to justify why they'd support you over them, if you know what I mean. So
yeah,
it's where it was sort of up and down. Like, I showed enough for the team to like me and see potential, but sponsors needed like that little bit better result and things like that to lock it in. So come pretty close to going back this year, but just, yeah, the way it worked out, couldn't quite afford to do it again. So then the mind switched, we'll try and race in Australia kind of thing, and figure something out there, which didn't leave us with a whole lot of time. But yeah, luckily I was contacted by Paul Roach from like the Simford Motorsport team, who they're supported by Husqvarna Australia, and yeah, we were able to organize a deal where I could stick with Husky, which was like a bit of a, you know, a plan for me to try and stay loyal to a brand that I've been on the last few years and have built a fair bit of knowledge around the bike and things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I felt pretty comfortable staying on with them and, to be able to race with them, you know, I wanted to be on sort of like a 450 or a 500 again, with the racing that we have here and the style of riding I have, I feel suits that kind of thing. So yeah, we just, sorted that out, figured out, what racing I wanted to do, which is sort of like, obviously the AORC, like the, Australian 4-day enduro this year, which will be down in Victoria, which will be really cool. The Victorian Off-Road Championship as well. It's like a Victorian based team, so
it all
seemed to click pretty good in that aspect. Just sort of pulled things together before Christmas, organized everything in January, and then it's obviously like any year, like you're always chasing your tail before this first round to try and get everything lined up. But we've, been able to spend some time on the bike and get things comfortable there. So it's all come together in time, luckily. And now we're on our way, obviously, up to Queensland to get the season underway. So
yeah, awesome, man. I think it's a good decision. Like you say, you've spent time on that bike. So to like, it's probably a big shift just coming back to Australia and getting back into your routine here, but being on the same bike like makes that process a little bit easier, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, and that was in the back of my mind all of last year too, was learning as much as I could from the team, because you never know what's going to happen next. Like, you know, from speaking to people during that year, like, oh, for sure you're here next year, like, you know, you're riding good in this aspect, but you just never know how things are going to pan out, kind of thing. So in the back of my mind, I always thought like, no, like, you never know if you're coming back next year, so make sure you're taking in as much as you can. And for me, that was being able to live with the team. Was like, I'll go down to the workshop, sweep the floors, and just, you know, watch or listen and see what they're doing to pick up maybe some mechanical knowledge or like something where it could help you down the track. So that was really beneficial, like, to pick up all those things. And even to the point where, like, I, halfway through the season, just before the summer break, I fractured my wrist in a training area, which was like a massive low spot in the season. But through that, it was 2 or 3 weeks before the 6-day enduro they had in Italy. And I was weighing up, I was, you know, not able to ride yet. I needed to make sure I wasn't doing anything to aggravate the wrist. And then the team needed a massive hand because they had so many riders they supported a 6-day race. So that in itself was a cool opportunity to work alongside mechanics and pick up a lot of bits and pieces that can help you to, I don't know, work on your bike during the week. You know, know what to look for to prevent things going wrong and things like that. So
just even the logistics of that, helping organize that in the back end, you would have learned tons, man.
Exactly. Like, to support 30 riders for a 6-day race is a logistical nightmare, especially when you've got like 5 or 6 different languages that people speak. So that just took in as much as I could to help for that, help for my future knowledge, kind of thing, for all that kind of thing. So it's all helped out a lot, especially in this circumstance. Like, I've had a bit more confidence in what direction to head in with things, and just put it to work while I'm back here in Australia. So
it's awesome, man. I'm excited to see this weekend. It's going to be, like we were sort of talking about last night, it's pretty open playing field this year with a few of the, obviously, Milner and Chucky and Mesa overseas. So kind of opens things up. And there's no real racing on the national front in off-road for like almost 2 years. So
exactly.
It's going to be pretty cool to see everyone going at it.
Yeah, definitely. And that was the thing. Like, I had two minds about it all. Like, I was, you know, thinking of that, like, oh, do I save money to try and get back to Europe? Because, you know, I would love to have another go now and know what I'd do from spending a season there. Or, you know, just do what we can to go racing here in Australia and just try and build our speed up here, which is, there was some key things that I wasn't quite on top of in Europe that I knew I could work on here in Australia. So I was going to be kicking myself if, you know, I knew what you just said then, like, the field's so level now with a few guys stepping out that the racing's going to be probably more exciting than ever. I would have been kicking myself if I wasn't part of it. So yeah, it's I'm excited to to see how it all unfolds. And I think for the sport, it's kind of to bring like a fresh sort of breath of light, because normally we already knew with the way it all was who was going to be the favorite, who, you know, technically should win with the the way it was all panned out. So whereas now, like, I feel like there's, you know, 5 to 6 guys that could take the overall, depending on which weekend who feels the best, kind of thing. So that's where it's gonna be, I think, an exciting year and good to follow. And
100%.
So nice.
I'm excited to see it all come together, man. I'm pretty confident you'll be right up at pointy end.
We'll see how we go. Like, for now, we've done all we can do to fit in as much as we could in the time we had. Now it's just a matter of seeing how it all unfolds and doing our best and see where that puts us, I guess. So
For sure. Have you, I see the team, you've got a few like different sponsors clothing wise and that. Is there anyone that you want to thank for the year coming up?
For sure. Like, I've which will be announced over this weekend. Like, I've been able to lock in like a glove sponsor through Fist Handwear out there in Queensland, which is pretty exciting. I used to buy their gloves, like, you know, at Ranfest back in the day, riding scooters and BMXs and stuff. So to lock that in last minute has been really cool. But team wise, we've got some really key sponsors, like Fly Racing, which, you know, do their gear and stuff like that. And same thing, like an awesome brand that's progressed so much, and I used to buy their gear back in the day as well. So it's like, it's a pretty cool feeling to look back through my career and be like, oh yeah, like, these are these brands that I've always kind of wanted to wear, and now I'm wearing them, which the team are supported by. Which, so gear wise, it's Fly City FMF goggles, and bike wise, we've got, you know, Bridgestone tires on it. The good WP suspension, which we've been able to get support through those guys as well, and get the bike and gear and everything sorted with some good support. So it's it's worked out really well. I think we've got a good little package going, and a good couple riders coming through, like, in our team as well, which would be exciting to see how they progress along as well this season.
It sounds like a good setup, man.
Well,
good luck this weekend, and I'll be you've got like back-to-back races, right, for the next few weeks. It's pretty hectic, this first sort of block of the schedule, right?
It's we pretty much go this weekend up in Queensland, straight away back to the first round of state titles here in Victoria in the Yarra Valley there, and then the weekend following up to Whitfield, so not far from here, and then from there straight to Mackay. So it's pretty much like a month straight straight to traveling. So
how long's from Whitfield to Mackay? What's the drive?
I think it says like a day and 2 hours, so obviously like 26 hours or something crazy. It's like not a short trip at all, that's for sure. But luckily, I think the old boy's gonna come on that one and help us drive a bit of that stint, luckily. So it should be good. Luckily you got a few like personal sponsors to help us to do all this racing too, so that like definitely pays dividends when you've got that like month block of racing. So without those guys it'd be a massive struggle. So luckily, thanks to them.
Well, that's awesome, man. Thanks heaps for your time. I know you got to get away today, so we'll be mindful of letting you get on the road.
Thank you, and thanks for letting us drop in and catch up a bit, and hopefully do another one soon.
Yeah, for sure. We'll catch up once we get a few races under the belt.
Yeah, sounds good.
Awesome.